For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. This morning, we learned that the husband of 5th District Congresswoman Johanna Hayes has tested positive for COVID-19 and that the Congresswoman and the rest of her immediate family will be self-quarantining for 14 days. Congresswoman Hayes joins us now, and first, let us say that we're very sorry for the trouble you and your family are experiencing right now. How is everybody doing?
Hi, thank you so much. My family is well, all things considered, resting and quarantining safely in our home. My husband is a police officer with the Waterbury Police Department. He actually is a detective, and he has been given masks and gloves and personal protective equipment. In the last week, I guess it was, someone in his office, the spouse of one of someone he works with, tested positive, and then his coworker also tested positive. So I guess the police department decided that everyone who had come into contact with this person needed to be tested, and they tested multiple people, and my husband's test came back positive.
So what I've heard is that your husband didn't necessarily feel any symptoms. Is that the case?
He didn't, which is, I guess, the scariest part about this for me, because I've been the one that's been sick. So I had symptoms. I had, in the last couple weeks, had flu-like symptoms. I had a fever. I had a cold. But because I hadn't checked all the boxes, I just figured, you know, someone else needs a test more than me, so I'm not going to get tested. Just taking care of myself, social distancing, all of the things that we heard about. When my husband got the results back, I immediately called the doctor back and I said, you just spoke with my husband and I have some concerns because I have been feeling sick and I'm scheduled to travel back to DC. So they told me to call back and I was able to schedule a test and went in and my test came back negative. So my husband hasn't had any symptoms. Just tired, if you will. He said his body just fell off, but I'm the one who's had the fever, who's had the cough, the aches, no shortness of breath. So it's so incredibly puzzling for me because we know so little about the way this virus travels that he tests positive. And now over the last couple of days, we've seen the symptoms begin to escalate for him. And we're living in the same house and I test negative.
Oh, this has to be incredibly nerve-wracking for everybody in your house.
Well, especially for my son, my 11-year-old, who keeps being drawn to the computer. He's asking questions, and I really don't have a lot of answers for him. And I think it's even more scary that he knows it's bad enough that they're not in school. We have several friends who we know that have passed away as a result of complications with COVID-19. So just the fact that he knows that his dad tested positive is really scary for him.
So you say you're self-quarantining for 14 days. Is that starting today?
As of yesterday. My husband got his results a few days ago, but I'm going from yesterday. But again, I don't even really know what that means, because if we're in the same house, and I don't know if we'll have the ability to be retested in 14 days, they say when you're symptom-free or haven't had a fever, but he never had a fever. So it just really is so incredibly frustrating and confusing. And again, I really think that we have to make sure that we pursue research to try to find some real answers and not cut corners in the sense of expediency to try to get answers. And then we're hit again with the pandemic in the fall, like we're hearing people talk about.
I know there have been increasing calls to reopen society with the thought that the coronavirus might be more in control. I imagine you have very serious thoughts about that.
Yes. In D.C., my office in D.C. is very small. Many of the members have very small offices. My staff sits in very close proximity. Voting on the floor is done in very close quarters. I really think that we have to think about what this looks like. And I know there's concern about, well, how does the work get done? Just like what we're saying is the people who have the ability to work from home should be doing that so that our hospitals are not overwhelmed, so our frontline workers are not put in harm's way. And we can make some changes to the operational structure in Congress, some rule changes so that we can do the same work. I just worry that it's not just about the optics of being in one place. If we have the ability to get the work done without putting more people in danger until we have more information, I think that's the course we should be pursuing.
You know, there's been a lot of back and forth about the prospect of Congress returning in D.C. What do you think should happen?
I don't think we're ready to return. We just found out that many employees were sick last week, many of the construction workers. I just don't think we have the infrastructure to do that. We don't have masks, personal protective equipment, different things like that. And I think the other part that makes it even that much more difficult to come up with a plan is that we're bringing in people from all over the country. So it's very different from at home where you have targeted hotspots or you have areas where there's a flare up and you try to contain it in that one area. In Congress, we have people from all over the country. Some people who are coming from hotspots, some people are coming from areas where there really is relatively little or no outbreaks or exposure at this time. So I think bringing us all together and then sending us back out is just recycling this virus. And we're not there yet. We really have to take a step back.
As former Teacher of the Year, I imagine you have thoughts about how schools have handled this pandemic and what the implications of this situation will be on our students, on our children going forward.
Well, that is one of those things. The effect on students keeps me awake at night, because what has happened is that this pandemic has really exposed so many glaring inequities that I've been talking about, not just in our schools, but in our communities. But in our schools in particular, there are some school districts in my fifth district that I represent that are just getting online with coursework, and others who, after a day or two, were prepared to launch their programs to get students up and running, teachers who had been educated on how to teach a flipped or a virtual classroom, and other districts where they're still waiting to get computers. That's a problem. The fact that we don't have equity and access to education is a problem. And then I think on the flip side of that, what we have to begin to prepare for is when these students returned. We really need to have some trauma-informed education. We're going to have all of these teachers who are receiving students who, like my son, are scared, have all these questions, don't really know what's going on, don't really know what to make of all of this, are maybe behind, may have lost, open up some big academic gaps, and teachers are going to have to receive those students. So we have to make sure that we have counselors on board, that we have all of these services in place, that kids are getting what they need. It was interesting for me, because as soon as we started thinking about closing schools, the first thing people thought about was, well, we have to make sure kids get lunch. How will they eat? And I said, this is what I've been trying to tell you. Schools serve so many functions for our students. And now we're just beginning to have those conversations. So now that we see it, I think we can't just put a lid back on it. We have to start closing those gaps, filling those voids, and answering those questions. And I think one of the biggest questions we're going to have to address is the needs of our special education students right now, who I fear are not being serviced at all during this pandemic.
We are seeing so many statistics with people of color being more adversely affected than the population at large by COVID-19. You are a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. What are the talks going on as to what can be done about that disparity?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. One of the things that we're talking about is why communities are so disproportionately impacted. And when we talk about the African American community, it's because there are so many underlying chronic health conditions. Actually, just yesterday, before I even knew about this, I introduced a bill for reducing COVID disparities to make sure that we had funding to study some of these illnesses, close some of those gaps. I've been a huge proponent of making sure that food security is possible for people and they have nutritious meals. When you're thinking about people who are diabetics or who have underlying asthma conditions or heart disease, high blood pressure, many of the things we're talking about, it's a much bigger issue. It's people's lack of access to healthcare, lack of access to nutritious foods. And these are things that we've known for a very long time, but the existence of this pandemic has really, once again, exposed all of these things. And we have to have these really difficult conversations about why some of our most marginalized communities are disproportionately impacted. And what I'm doing, not just with the Congressional Black Caucus, but with my colleagues throughout the full caucus, is to say, how do we close some of these systemic inequities, these gaps in our society, these public-private partnerships, so that people have what they need, so that people are overall healthy and can fight off an illness or a sickness or even something as big as a pandemic.
Congresswoman Johanna Hayes, we thank you so much for sharing some of your thoughts. And certainly from the bottom of our hearts, we wish you and your family good health.
Thank you. And please stay safe. And I just encourage everyone to keep their families safe and listen to the science and the doctors and heed the advice that our medical professionals are giving us.